the book of Micah, and I'll be reading the first 8 verses. Hear what the Lord says. Arise, plead your case before the mountains, and let the hills hear your voice. Hear, you mountains, the indictment of the Lord, and you enduring foundations of the earth, for the Lord has an indictment against his people, and he will contend with Israel. O my people, what have I done to you? How have I wearied you? Answer me. For I brought you up from the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of slavery. I sent before you Moses, Aaron, Miriam. O my people, remember what Balak, king of Moab, devised, and what Balaam, son of Beor, answered him, and what happened to Shittim to Gilgal, that you may know the righteous acts of the Lord. With what shall I go before the Lord and bow myself down before God on high? Shall I go before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oils? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgressions, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God? This is the word of the Lord.
So about 4 weeks ago, I decided to take a prayer drive through Fort Worth. And so I went through Fort Worth. I went through downtown. I went through the west side. I drove through Magnolia. Ended up going through River East. I went and prayed through the TCU area. I went to the south side. And then I finished my journey on the corner of Miller and Rosedale on the east side. And I noticed a lot of things. As I was praying, I noticed several things. Here's a little bit of what I noticed. I noticed the different types of stores that each section of the city had. I noticed a difference in how well the roads and the streets were kept in each section of the city. I noticed the amount of public transportation in the various sections of the city. I noticed the amount of shelters that certain sections of the city had over against other sections of the city. I noticed the racial makeup of various sections of the city over against other sections of the city. I noticed the amount of teen centers and boys and girls clubs and YMCAs in certain sections of the city over against other sections of the city. I even noticed the amount of loose dogs in certain sections of the city over against other sections of the city. I noticed, my friends, that our beloved city of Fort Worth is so broken. Our city is so broken, and I came to this conclusion as a result of this. I came to the conclusion that Sunday is not enough. If Sunday was enough, the literacy levels in our school systems would be better. If Sunday was enough, the crime in the south and the east sides of the city would be less. If Sunday was enough, the orphans and the widows would be better cared for. If Sunday was enough, there would be less of an opportunity for sexual predators to linger amongst our children. If Sunday was enough, there would be less of a battle to have the haves to link arms with the have-nots. If Sunday was enough, our city would mount up together for the good of the village. But the reality is that the illiteracy levels are high, crime is too easily committed, widows and orphans are hungry, sexual predators lurk freely amongst us. Hurting people hurt people. And those with abundant resources throw bones at those who need to learn how to cook meals. Sunday's not enough, y'all. Y'all ever watch National Geographic? And so I'm a dude that likes like animal shows. And I love watching when the lion pride hunts the buffalo. And always the herd of buffalo is more numerous than the pride of lions hunting it. But for some reason, the herd always runs away. Every time the lionesses show up, the herd runs away. Well, one time, boy, I tell you, I was watching Nat Geo. and the lionesses were hunting the buffalo, and there's a little baby buffalo sitting there, and they pounced on him. They put them claws into him. And the buffalo didn't run. The buffalo turned all of them and encircled the pride of lions, and they put their horns up and they attacked the lions and freed the baby buffalo. Come on. They didn't run like they used to. But what if the buffaloes only defended their babies on Sunday? The point is simple, y'all. Sunday is just, it's never going to be enough. If we're gonna be on mission to make disciples, Sunday is not enough. If we're gonna see pillars of faith and flourishing in every area of our city, Sunday is not enough. Last I checked, sin works Monday through Sunday. And sin has ravaged our city. It is broad and it is deep. Sin prevails in our city. It's incredible. It's deeper every week. This kind of left me thinking, like, God, where you at? As I drove through certain areas of the city and I'm seeing what I'm seeing in the streets, my mind starts thinking, God, where you at? You see what I see, and what's up? Act. Do something. In many ways, I indicted the Lord. I indicted him of neglect and abandonment. I indicted him of favoritism and partiality. Some of you guys can relate if you've seen hard things. Some of you are old enough to remember the Coptic Christians who had their heads cut off on the beach in Libya. As I'm watching that, I'm like, Lord, like, throw a gust of wind, do something. Some of you guys don't know what it's like to see a crack baby struggling to survive in a NICU. You look at that baby and you're like, God, really? That's what's good? That's what you got? Just a couple weeks ago, we all heard news of that school shooting. And the people in the school who are crying out for help, God, where you at while the bullets are riddling the school? If I'm not mistaken, just on the news, wasn't there one like yesterday or the day before too? God, where you at, Lord? Come on, I'm just telling y'all where my heart was, y'all. Where's he at? Some of us was thinking, God, did you abandon America with the two presidential candidates we had? We had top socket and bottom socket. You could choose, man. God, where you at? Like this. Well, praise God for the passage this morning. Because I think that the passage of scripture this morning very much so mirrors the sentiment of the hearts of God. What do you want from me? Where are you? At this particular point in time, during the time of the Israelites, Israel is a vassal nation run by another nation, but they experienced a dramatic spike in prosperity. And all of a sudden, the racial classes started to divide sharply. And so there was a bunch of people who just had plenty, and then there was a bunch of people who had nothing. And the ones with plenty usually kept their plenty off the backs of the people who had nothing. And the people are like, what's up, Lord? You see what's happening. I'm crying out to you daily. I know you hear my pain. You're there. Well, do some. And so we come to God now in Micah chapter 6, verse 1. He says in verse 1, hear what the Lord says. Arise. Plead your case before the mountains and let the hills hear your voice. We'll stop there. We serve a God who's not shaken by our indictments. We serve a God who is not riddled and rattled by what riddles and rattles us. He tells his people to come on, bring the indictment. Go ahead, speak. Bring it to me. The nation of Israel is a griping people. There are people who constantly and continuously complain to the Lord. They often would complain about God's unloving actions. They would complain about God's neglect and abandonment of them frequently. They would receive God's goodness only to complain about his lack of involvement later. As the nation of Israel is just like me, and they're just like you. God says, bring your case, and the mountains and the hills shall be witnesses in this cosmic court. And so this is basically what I did to God. I brought my case. I observed the city and I charged God with neglect and favoritism. Here's how I came to that conclusion. I sat down and I spoke with people in certain areas of the city who tend to have wealth. And I listened to their lack of empathy as they sit in their comfortable towers of wealth. I drove around and spoke with people who are experiencing homelessness. And I listened to the despair in their heart and their desire to escape their circumstances. And so they turned to things like narcotics to help them escape the realities that are just so hard to bear. God, where you at? I talked to a bunch of inner city youth and I listened to their heart's desire to be wealthy and to have a bunch of money and how education is a waste of time. I'm like, God, where you at? So I charged them. I saw this brokenness in all these different classes of people and types of people, and things are broken and God sees what I see. And so I indicted God. Act. You're big, you're mighty, you're strong, come on. And so we moved from my indictment to verse 2. Hear, you mountains, the indictment of the Lord, and you enduring foundations of the earth, for the Lord has an indictment against his people, and he will contend with Israel. Stop there. God essentially turns the tables. God says, oh, you have an indictment on me? No, I have an indictment against you, O people of Israel. He indicts his people with forgetfulness. He indicts his people with forgetfulness. Look at verse 3. He says, oh, my people, what have I done to you? How have I wearied you? Answer me. For I brought you up from the land of Egypt and redeemed you from the house of slavery. And I sent before you Moses and Aaron and Miriam. God hearkens back to the oppression that they suffered under the hands of Egypt and the Pharaoh during that particular time. He reminds them of his mighty hand and how he delivered them from these 400 years of bondage and wilderness wanderings. So he says, no, you forgot. He reminded them of the plagues that he inflicted to display his power. He reminded them of how he literally split the sea to display his might. He reminded them of the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire to display his guidance of them. He reminded them of the manna from the sky and the water from the rock to display his care and his provision for his people. He reminded them of that beautiful promised land to display his loyalty, for that was a promise that he made. God says, oh no, you indict me, I indict you. You have forgotten, Canaan. I indict you. Look at verse 5. Oh my people, remember what Balak, king of Moab, devised? On what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him? And what happened from Shittim to Gilgal? That you may know the righteous acts of the Lord. Oh, my friends, if you were to read back about how King Balak despised the people of Israel, he despised them and hated them because they were so numerous, so much that he went and got a prophet for hire to come and curse the nation.
And after that prophet for hire, Balaam, comes, after numerous requests for him to come, he comes and he says, man, I will pay you. Curse this people. Shut it down. And so Balaam goes up and God says, nah, my man, you ain't cursing nobody. Speak blessings and promises to them. It's God displaying his provision of his people. All while this is happening, his people are griping. His people are complaining. His people are disregarding and flat disrespecting God by worshiping false idols. Yet God protects. God holds strong. God is watching over his people. Just like the people of Micah's day, we tend to have short memories. We tend to forget what God has done in the past, and therefore we don't believe him in the power of his might for what he can do in the future. Psalm 103 hearkens us to do something in verse 2. It says, bless the Lord, O my soul. Here it is. And forget not all his benefits. God has to remind us not to forget about his benefits because he knows that we are creaturely beings who tend to forget the good things when the circumstances of hard things arise. This was my heart of indictment against God. I saw brokenness. I saw pain. I saw ignorance. I saw selfishness. I saw fatherlessness. No doubt this is what people during Micah's time are seeing, and so they're indicting God. We see all these things, yet God indicts us with memory loss. Can you relate with that? When your present-day circumstances literally cause the truth to leak out of your ears, because you know God is good and you know God is loving. You know these things, but the circumstances you are currently in are hard. Is God really good? Circumstances are so powerful. They maneuver and shape the way we think. Sometimes we see hard things and we wonder where God is in it all. If you've ever had the privilege of visiting a third world country or a war-torn country or a country that is struggling with poverty, you'll walk those streets, you'll smell those smells, and you'll start to think, man, God, what? Man, people live like this? I remember a story of people who came back from the earthquake in Haiti several years ago, and they talked about how they saw babies stuck between brick buildings because the earthquake squeezed the baby into them. Man, when you see that, you start thinking. You start, God, really? Like, this is big. This is hard. What was that? Like, you could change that. Yeah, you didn't have to let that happen, God. Where you at? Some of us are the victims of abuse at the hands of people we trusted. And where does our mind go? God, you right then and there, where were you? Man, I was struggling, I was fighting, I was kicking, I was biting, I was scratching, and I was overpowered. God, what's up? Why don't you stop it? You saw it. And if circumstances are hard, you start thinking, God, what's up? This ain't cool. Some of us have never needed anything in our entire lives. Some of us have never gone through a hardship like that. Some of us, our parents bought, some of you, your parent bought you a car. You got allowance as a kid. I didn't get no allowance. I'm going to call my mom today. Your hardship was arguing with mom over a curfew and a cell phone. You know what's ironic about that? Both circumstances tend to cause you to forget God's benefits. You could have gone through the hardest of the hard and you forget God's benefits. You could have had the most plush, ivory tower of a life. And guess what you do? You forget God's benefits. And so God has to tell us, man, don't be forgetting God's benefits. Don't forget about me. And so the flow of the passage is we like them, we indict God. We indict him of neglect, of favoritism, of abandonment. And then he turns around and indicts us with forgetfulness. And it leaves the people of Israel like this. Like, what do you want from me? Like, okay, I indicted you, and now you indicted me, and now I'm just confused, but all I know is that reading about the history of what you did didn't change these streets. I saw what you did, I heard what you did, I read what you did, but the streets are still hurting, God. I can read those stories of your redemption all day. Where you at? And so this is the posture we find ourselves as we come into verse 6 and 7. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings? With calves a year old? Would the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression? The fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? Did y'all notice the progression that they walk through here? He says, man, I bow myself before you. Is that what it is? Is that what you want? That's what's going to take to get you to act for I messed up. Okay, is this what it's going to take for you to act? I will bow before you, Lord. Is that what you want me to bow? I'm going to sacrifice a year-old calf or a burnt offering. In the Old Testament, that's a sin offering, those burnt offerings. You want to sacrifice a calf, year-old, perfect, spotless? Is that what it's going to take to get you to do something? How about 1,000 rams? That's good. How about 10,000 rivers of oil? Bro, I'll sacrifice my firstborn. I'll give you my, to atone for my sin, I'll give you my firstborn son. Y'all hear that? Y'all hear that? That's deep. I'll give you my offspring, Lord. That's deep. That's the sound of desperation. That's someone who's desperate for something. I as I read this, I think of Paul, who is like, man, I will give my very soul for the salvation of my brethren. That's desperation. That's deep. There's some love in that. That's what he said in verse 7, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul. Ooh. They're in that part of the verse, in verse 7, they're admitting that they're part of the problem. And that's where some of us are. We admit that we are the source of some of our problems. Some of you guys recognize and struggle with the fact that you can't get it right. That we keep trying to be the captain of our own ship and we keep crashing it into the Atlantic. And we're starting to get into a place of despair. It's an issue of acceptance and self-worth we're starting to wrestle with because of these issues. Is that you? That's me. And Jesus wants you. He'll not only tell you the truth, but he'll walk with you through the muck and the mire. He will look at you with love and compassion and transform that hopelessness into a substantive hope. See, verse 6 and 7 are statements of hopelessness in the form of exaggeration. You hear that with your kids. Well, you want me to just clean the whole house? That's an exaggeration statement of hopelessness, right? They know they are unable, they can't, the task is too large for them to do, and so they exaggerate it, and they go, really? Ain't nobody got no rivers of oil? But they're like, God, is that what it's gonna take? Like rivers of oil? Like I'll give you my son. God, come on. Do some. These are statements of acknowledgement. The people are acknowledging that their sin has offended God, and now they're conceding. They're giving up. That's where it's at. When you get to that point where you're exaggerating your hopelessness, you're basically at a point of, it's over, I'm done. What do you want from me? They're conceding to the evils amongst them. They're conceding to the poverty. They're conceding to the oppression. They're conceding to the ignorance of the majority. God, you want too much. The task is too big. I can't handle it. I'm done. I don't know what you want from me. I can't do it. That's what was running through my mind as I drove the streets. What's it going to cost, Lord, to get this place right with you? What do you want from me? How's this going to happen? And so, you know what I did? I conceded.
maybe nothing can be done. You know, Fort Worth is just too far gone. What I saw, that's just too far. It's too hard. It's too big. Maybe I should stick to the comforts of Sunday. I tend to do good on Sunday. Maybe I should stick with that. The work is too grand. The harvest is too plentiful. The pain is too deep. I can't penetrate it. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. Lord, I'm overwhelmed. It's really good. What am I supposed to do? That's the feeling. But if you look closely in the statements of concession, there are themes of redemption in there. What did Jesus do at the Garden of Gethsemane but bow his will to the will of the Father? Jesus' body and blood became our sin offering. That's what Hebrews 10 and 1 Peter 1 teaches us. He don't need the blood of a ram or a goat or a bull. No, his blood was what was needed. You know, the people of Israel here are like, y'all give up my first son. God's like, no, your son doesn't do anything. You need my son. My son is what brings redemption. My son is what sends the spirit of power upon you. You need my son. Your son accomplishes nothing. We don't need the sacrifice of your son. I'm going to sacrifice my son. And that's the point. That's the point. When God told the people to remember Egypt and how he, with his mighty hand, saved the people from the mighty power of Pharaoh, what did he say? He said, I sent you Moses, and I sent you Aaron, and I sent you Miriam. When God calls his people to remember the contentions they had with King Balak, he says, man, I even used a prophet for hire to speak blessings upon you. He calls them to remember the spirit-empowered men and women that led the charge in the work that God was doing. God didn't abandon anything. The people felt like they were abandoned by God, and they're in this wilderness. God, what's really good? They're enslaved by Pharaoh. God, where are you at? And he's like, bro, I sent you Moses and Aaron and Miriam. Jesus empowers his people to do mighty works that will impact generations. My friends, God didn't abandon Fort Worth. Now I'm driving the streets, man. God didn't just leave it alone. He got you. He sent me. He didn't abandon anything. I'm looking at the streets and I'm like, Lord, where you at? And Lord's like, yo, I'm right here. Go do work. He empowers his people. And they go and they work in their weakness. Moses couldn't even speak right. But he goes and confronts the Pharaoh and leads people. He's a broken man, and God used broken men and women. It's Jesus who pays the price for the sin that the people in the streets are enslaved to. And it's Jesus who is able to bring transformation in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Asia Minor, and in Fort Worth. That same Jesus is going to do work and can do work here. Whew. And he's commissioned us to join him in the work. That's what he's called us to do. This ain't a new commission. This is 700 BC. This is an old commission. But it's the same commission. Go. Do some work. When are we going to get our fingernails a little dirty? Look at verse 8. I got way ahead in my sermon, y'all. Whew. Look at verse 8. He says, he has told you, oh man, what is good. Here's what's good, y'all. And what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with your God. This is what God has called us to. He said, listen, go do justice, go love kindness, and walk humbly with your God. That's what he's calling his people to do amongst the oppression and the class divisions, amongst the brokenness and the fatherless, amongst all the hurt, the pain, the sorrow, the homelessness, and the people who have wealth. He says, go do work, go do justice. Go love kindness and go walk humbly with your God. Welcome to something called missional engagement.
Missional engagement is every day of the week. My friends, Sunday is not enough. We sing praises to our God on Sunday. The Lord knows I love Sunday. Sunday is good. It's the gathering of the people of God, but there is no such thing as changing the transforming communities by just coming in on Sunday. Sin had a grip on them the very next day and the day before. Sunday's good. Man, Sunday's not enough. We've been trying Sunday for generations and generations and generations. And we've watched sin's grip do this and this and this on your family and on my family and in your neighborhood. Whether it's the wealth grip of sin and that, or it's the sin of not having, it doesn't matter. Sin is gripping people. The enemy knows the desires and the plights that easily entangle us, and he is throwing them at us. When we come here on Sunday, we need a worship service outside of Sunday with people. We need to be missionally engaged with people where the people of God, filled with the Spirit of God, engage our city with a biblical worldview. To do justice is to recognize the oppression where we live, where we work, and where we play, and to fight against it. To do justice is not throwing bones at a situation, but helping to stabilize resources. Doing justice is thinking through how you can bring benefit in education without appropriation. Because that's often what happens is we go in to help and then we end up taking over the joint. And then the whole thing, it looks different than what we came in to help in the first place. It's not the people who are helped, they just gone. It's fighting not to live in a bubble or a vacuum. We get to fight not to just live where we live, but we got to live amongst where our brethren live and where the people are hurting live. And we need to be there with them. To do justice is not only to have those race conversations, but to put energy and resources in moving it to action. It's empowering indigenous leadership. It's ensuring that everyone in the village has a sandwich and a bottle of water. It's not letting someone get played when you have the power to liberate them. Don't do justice and injustice by minimizing it. I fully believe that the gospel of Jesus Christ is what saves the soul of a sinner who is in desperate need of a savior. I believe that wholeheartedly, but I also believe that the gospel of Jesus Christ has natural consequences that flesh itself out in the life of a believer. That lofty theology becomes practical theology. And so if you've been changed by the Spirit of God, there's a natural flow to desire to see the flourishing of God's people and to see broken people restored in Jesus. That's just what happens to your heart. You want it. We can't just philosophize on Sunday and expect the community to be regenerated on Monday. If we could, it would already happen. God does miraculous work when he sends us to work. He sent Joseph to work and saved Israel from the famine. He sent Moses to work and saved his people from imminent destruction. He sent Joshua to work and the people went to go overtake the promised land. He sent judges and kings and prophets to turn the people where they should go. Jesus went to work as he walked the streets healing and proclaiming truth. The apostles and pastors and deacons put in work as they trailblazed his name throughout the regions. My friends, whoo, he's sending us to work. He's sending us to work and it's beyond work on Sunday, y'all. It's time to get that dirt under our fingernails. It's time to risk a little and see God work in our weakness. Verse 8 says that we need to do justice, but then it says that we need to love kindness. That word kindness is a multifaceted term. It's a weighty term. The word kindness is kind of like the Hebrew word shalom. If you've heard that word means peace, but it means so much more than just peace. There's more to it. It means wholeness and restoration and health. It means more. And this word for kindness is similar. That word kindness carries with it love. It carries with it loyalty. It carries with it faithfulness. A good English word for it, I think, is like steadfastness. That's the idea. Like steadfast love and faithfulness. What's this implying? It means that your beyond Sunday work can't be short. Oftentimes, we join an organization, we go in to help a particular place, we snap the Instagram shot, and then we're gone. Well, that person still doesn't have milk in their fridge. Hurting people are sick of being photo opportunities. Hurting people need you to dwell amongst them and live amongst them and love amongst them. When their power's out, your power should be out too. This is where you are. This is you. This is your people. This is it. You here. That's the idea, man. This is long time. This is long. Man, God works. I don't know if I was reading it wrong, but I think Moses was in the wilderness with his people. I think Joseph was living in their land, even though they were prosperous. He was there. He was there under some bad circumstances, especially in the beginning, locked up. I think Jesus was living amongst the people in which he ministered. I think the apostles were around during the persecution of the early church. They didn't flee to the towers of safety, but they let God use them as they risked it all in their weakness. We need to be a community in the community on mission. Faithful, loyal, steadfast, loving kindness beyond the cameras. Aren't you sick of reacting to circumstances? When are we going to play a little offense as the people of God and not continually react to what happens to us, our country, our communities? When are we going to force our communities, our country, our places where we dwell to react at the moves of God? I won't play no more defense. How about we move forward? Unless you're like Mayweather and defense turns into offense. That's cool, but. He says to do justice. He says to love kindness. And then he says, and walk humbly with your God. That's it right there. That's the key to it all. Walk humbly with your God. It's our personal relationship with God that will enable us to do all that he is calling us to do. He sustains our efforts. He renews our strength. He affects and erects pillars of faith and symbols of strength that push back darkness. He is literally our energy. Like, we walk daily with God. That's literally our energy. That's our power source. You are powerful when you spend time with the potentate, with the power. That's how you get power, by being with him. You still feel weak, don't you? You feeling weak? And that's because it's not your power. Him. His. Accompanying you. One soul who walks humbly with the Lord is a threat to the sin of our streets. And God has a newsflash. He's drafted an entire army. Last I checked, the Spirit of God was the third person of the Trinity, right? And the third person of the Trinity is endowed with all the divine attributes of God. And last I checked, that third person of the Trinity indwelt every single believer. Which means you are accompanied by the most powerful entity in existence ever. Man, let's go. You have the most powerful entity equipping you. And not only just you, he's in your homie next to you. And you're like, yo, let's go. And he's with that dude. And it's like, yo, let's roll. And now you got a team of spirit-empowered homeboys and homegirls doing work in the city. Man, that's dangerous. It's lovely. We gonna do it? Or we just gonna come on Sunday? Are you ready and willing to be an instrument in the hands of a mighty God? God didn't abandon or forget this city. My indictment with God was really an indictment against me. For the city has been given what it needs to flourish. God has dispatched his people, you and me. What does that mean? What does that look like? What do you do? I don't pretend to have all the answers and how to do all this, but here are some things that it may look like. It may mean that you're going to volunteer at your local teen center to impact youth. It may mean that you're going to volunteer to teach economic classes because that's where you're gifted. And you're going to teach people how to build resources when they have little to no resources at all, because that's just your skills. It's just what you're good at. It may mean that you pass out bread and water.
It may mean that if you're the owner of a particular company or a thing, you're going to try to get jobs for people who have been struggling to get jobs to feed their family. And so they result to illegal activity, but you have power within your grasp to give them employment and to speak truth in their life. Maybe that's what it looks like. Maybe you're going to join a nonprofit and be an influencer in your community. I don't know. But all I do know is that God has given each of us who believe in him a dose of his spirit. He has given us gifts to be used for the kingdom and for his work. We're going to use them on Monday, Thursday. Then whatever realm you are, just make sure that you're doing it, that you're using them. God told us what to do. He told us to go do justice, go love kindness, and go walk humbly with your God. Guys, it has to be bigger than Sunday. It just has to be.